Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The first time you come back into the studio, you cycle down to the shop and you're like, oh, I just got creeped. Someone just stopped me on the streets of Ranelagh and said, are you from the Creep Dive? Are you Sophie White? And I was like, I refuse to believe it.
That's it. I say we just stop believing her.
But sure, I got creeped out here. Just stop believing her.
Fuck off. You didn't.
She didn't.
Of course not. Imagine that. Imagine. Okay, go on.
Something exciting happened this week. Very exciting. I'm going to bring you the creep of the week, and it's something I love when this happens. I love it. It's when someone gets swallowed by an animal. And it happened again. It happens more often than it doesn't.
Of course.
Do you want a quickie to kick us off? Absolutely. This is only just last Friday, right? This happened to a local lobster diver caught in the mouth of a humpback whale off the coast of Cape Cod last Friday morning, said he thought he was going to die. Obviously. Yeah. His name is Michael Packard. He's the ripe age of 56. Shut up, Cassie. He is...
He's 56 years young.
Exactly. He... Wait for this, right? He was 45 feet, 14 meters deep in the water. You're asking for trouble at those depths, yeah. I think. Anyway.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden he says, I felt this huge bump, then everything went dark.
No.
He said he thought he'd been attacked by a shark, very common in the area. Then he realized as he felt around that he couldn't feel any sharp teeth. And also, he was not in physical pain, no punctures. And he said,
Now I'm inside something.
Exactly, he said to him. He said here, I realized, oh my God, I'm in a whale's mouth. It's going to try and swallow me.
Oh
right?
My God. Did he describe how much room he had in there?
Well, it was fucking huge. So he had enough room to feel the walls of the mouth for no teeth. Span his arms around like that, which you would. Then he said, right, I'm going to die. His final thoughts went to his wife and children. Right. He estimated he was in the whale's mouth for about 30 seconds, but continued to breathe because he had his breathing apparatus in. Is my sound still working? Or can I not hear you two?
Yeah.
Oh, I can
hear.
Yeah,
you're okay.
Oh, I've,
okay, so he had his breathing.
I was just thinking that thing about his wife and child, that's a lie. Definitely. That's exactly what you would say. Well. After the fact.
And we all would say that. But what are we really thinking when we're being pushed
last
down the
meal.
Gullet of a whale? We are thinking things like, shouldn't have bothered shaving my armpits. I should have just released the piss now. I'd been holding on to it forever. Things that... anyway, right? So he was getting sucked into the gullet now at this stage. He could feel the kind of motions of the tongue going back. And he was like, this is it, I'm goner. Then whale surfaced, spat the fucker out. And there he was.
Oh my God.
So he was rescued by his crewmate in the boat that was on the water that he just hopped off. And his sister, Cynthia, originally... Yeah, his sister, Cynthia, originally told the Cape Cod Times that her brother had had a broken leg. But in the end, it was just bruised. So that's it. Fucking amazing, isn't it? Isn't that
absolutely
amazing?
Absolutely mad.
So humpback's never aggressive. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Filter feeders. So he just got caught up in the big mouth. And isn't that so cool? Like, what are the chances?
Crazy. Did he think there should be a ride?
No, I have no more information. I think he gave an immediate interview with the Cape Cod Times, and they got to him too quickly, so we had no satisfying details of inside, which I'm sure he'll write a book later, and I'll tell you all about it when the book comes out. But how fucking amazing is that, lads?
That is so cool.
These kind of mad shit happens all the time. And now we're here to talk about it together. Thank God for that.
That's a very good...
Absolutely. We've all lived to tell the tales of other people.
What do we have this week?
Well, I have all kinds of everything. Remind me of... Shoe. Okay, no, that's... That is in no way teeing up. There's nothing connected with shoe in any of my stories, except that maybe some people are probably wearing shoes in some of my stories. So basically, I can deliver any of the above. A creeplet, a little creep nugget, a crugget.
Yes.
Crugget.
Yes.
How have we never said crugget before?
Love a crugget.
I can do a crugget. I can do a medium. Chromedium.
A chromedium?
I can do a chromedium, or I can do like really sink your teeth in. I've got a really good one. So there we go. I can bring everything.
Oh, you can't tee it up like that and say I've got a really good one.
With your little, give us that.
Little cute little cold face scrunched up there in all your shawls saying I've got a really good one.
Look at the circulation it's got. It's so sad. So happy to be here though. Happiness is a warm creep.
What are you brewing?
I have the story of Tammy Faye Messner, the American Christian singer, evangelist, author, yes, talk show host, and television personality that fell from grace.
Yes.
Literally the grace of God.
Amazing. Now, is that going to be you're more American bashing? Because
it sounds it.
Yes.
Fine.
I'm going to bash the Americans, the Christians, and men.
I have a listicle of many ways in which animals attack my ultimate favourite area of interest. And I have a tiger attack at feels like a German Las Vegas show where you eat your dinner and you watch a lion tamer that went terribly, terribly wrong.
In the presence of a lion eating many rare lions, meat. Sophie. Just every table in that place has a kind of a medium rare steak on it. And you just sit and wait.
Exactly.
Amazing. I think you should let the Tammy out first. Because mine has... Oh, yeah. You. Mine has harrowing.
I'd recommend taking a visual. What's your one's name again?
Tammy
Faye Baker or Tammy Faye Messner. You'll get her either way. So she...
Take a moment.
This is timely. Do Google her because we have a new show coming. Tammy's not a... Tammy's one of these women who is... It's hard to tell what she looks like naturally because she's got the very thinned out brows, the kind of the blue eyeshadow up to the eyebrow, heavy on the lip liner, and she likes a kind of
heavy on the surgery.
A two-tone lip, heavy on heavy on a lot of things on her face. So
anyone remember Celebrity Deathmatch?
Yes.
That yes. is what we're looking at here. It's an it's a sort of a woman in the style of Celebrity Deathmatch.
Perfect.
Sorry, Cass. Okay. Cassie just doesn't know because she's only 9.
I do know. I remember Celebrity Deathmatch. I watched an episode before it was cancelled. Tammy Faye, born Tamara Faye, was born the 7th of March 1942. She was born to Pentecostal preachers Rachel and Carl. And shortly after she was born, her painful divorce between her parents meant that her mother distrusted ministers and wasn't exactly in favor of the weird organized religions that existed. And so her mother sort of pulled away from the church. Tammy initially was a bit alienated from the church. Her mother married again for a second time, and he had 7 children. So Tammy became the eldest of 8 children, right?
That maths checks.
So I'd say her life was, you know, was she married like much later? Her mother married a couple of years after the divorce to a man who had 7 other children. So I'm sure Tammy's life was difficult. I'm sure that she probably didn't get the attention that she craved from people. And she had sort of different issues that will come to light later on. So in 1960, she met a man called Jim Baker. Well, they were students at the North Central Bible College in Minnesota. Tammy was working in a boutique for a time while Jim worked in a restaurant inside a department store.
Desperate they were married to in the be first in a of Bible April college 19. In the '60s, really, isn't it? It's a terrible waste.
I'd say so.
The '60s,
yeah, absolutely. They were married on the 1st of April, 1961, and they moved to South Carolina, where they began ministry together. So Jim was quite religious. I mean, the two of them were, I suppose, picking it up in Bible college or whatever. So initially they started traveling around the US. Baker preached and Tammy sang songs and played the accordion. In 1970, she gave birth to their first daughter, Tammy Sue Sissy Baker. And in 1975, gave birth to their son, Jamie Charles Baker. So Jim and Tammy kind of had been involved with TV from the time of initially once they started moving around. And they were founding members of a thing called the 700 Club, which was a kind of Christian broadcasting network, one of the programs, one of the big Christian broadcasting networks. So, you know, the way they used to have like evangelist general networks and people might have different shows in them or whatever, like normal TV shows, but for weird Christians. So they were hosts then of a really popular show, a children's show called Jim and Tammy. And they created the puppet ministry for children on Pat Robertson Christian Broadcasting Network, which ran from 1964 to 1973. So initially their ministry was like all through puppets, and they became sort of like household names within this Christian evangelical Pentecostal community. Because obviously Christian parents plunked their Christian children in front of the Christian children program.
Oh, yeah.
Which Tammy and Jimmy
It's like the ran. Satanism so, cartoons on YouTube for my kids. I just want to set them on exactly. the right path early.
That's it.
It's like murder for minors.
Satanism is like a much maligned, you know, spiritual choice, but it's actually very positive. It's a very positive
yes.
religion
yeah.
if you look into it. If you look past
yes. or don't look
some of the bad press.
I mean, there's a lot in any sort of religion that, that does seem good on the surface. So in 1974, Tammy and Jim co-founded the PLT Club, Praise the Lord, which was its own evangelist Christian news program, which they initially hosted in an abandoned furniture store.
And a delicious it was a sandwich mix of glitzy.
They,
I just feel that they have some, if they haven't made that sandwich, then Jim and Tammy are missing a fucking trick. You know, it
they,
could
well,
be pastrami,
they tried
lettuce, tomato.
Gorgeous. They tried everything. So the series was like glitzy entertainment with down you know, down home family values, and they talked about the prosperity of gospel, a divine seal of approval on both the growing affluence of American evangelists and the showy lifestyles of their television ministers. They grew into its own network and corporate enterprise, and within a year of its founding, it was generating $120 million annually in the 1970s, which is insane.
We need to rebrand as the Christian Dive. And turn this whole ship around and fucking make some money.
By 1978, so just 4 years after founding, they used $200 million of PLT funds to build Heritage USA, a Christian retreat and theme park that was like Disney World levels of
what
popular.
What are the
and
rides
it was one of the most popular theme parks. What's the
baptism? Splash Mountain.
Definitely. The stations Splash of the cross. Mountain. That has to be a roller coaster or something. Like where you'd be on a roller coaster and you'd have to be carrying something really like cumbersome and heavy. And then like the roller coaster would like zoom around and you'd have to hold on to the cross and then it would stop in places and people would pelt you with rotten food and insults.
Yeah, some sort of spirit in the sky, like really super high ride that like brings you up and then drops you down suddenly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you could be buried alive.
Some sort of like hell or heaven seesaw thing going on there. I'd say it was great crack. Anyway, it was massive. It was so successful. But Tammy was a little bit different to the kind of traditional values of the evangelist Pentecostals who used to watch the show. And obviously during the time that they were like coming to prominence and coming to fame, especially at the start of the 80s, the AIDS epidemic was rife in the States. And Tammy actually used her platform to talk about taboo topics like the LGBT community, the AIDS epidemic, and preached to people to extend their Christian values to support people who had AIDS, which was, you know,
Tammy, good.
Which was really good. Yeah. Tammy was actually pretty solid, you know, and at the height of the AIDS epidemic, she interviewed Stephen Peters, a gay Christian minister with AIDS, on Tammy's House Party, a segment of the PLT Club network. During which they discussed his sexuality, coming out, diagnosis with AIDS, the death of his partner. And during the program, this is where Messner emotionally pleaded to viewers and said how sad that we as Christians who are the salt of the earth, who are supposed to be able to love everyone, are so afraid so badly of an AIDS patient that we will not go up and put our arm around them and tell them that we care. Throughout the AIDS epidemic, Tammy advocated for viewers of the PLT Club to follow Christ and show compassion and pray for the ill. And she also invited drug addicts onto the show to interview them about substance abuse, which was an interesting prequel to her 1987 revelation that she herself was a drug addict to prescription drugs.
Ah,
so
good woman, Tammy. Yeah. I mean, Cass, are you about to ruin all this? Are you about to ruin
Tammy? I mean,
Tammy?
She seems very positive.
Tammy herself is one of us, I feel, right? She's just a normal gal who then ran a very successful production network. Well done to two of you again. but she got a little too fond of the success. So
we are no fear.
Yeah. The control of the Praise the Lord network collapsed in 1987 after revelations that $287,000 had been paid out of the organization to buy the silence of a woman called Jessica Hahn. So Jessica Hahn claimed the gym $7,000. So Jessica Hahn claimed that Jim had sexually assaulted her. And but he's disputed the account, claiming that it was a setup and that their sex was consensual. But obviously a Christian and, you know, evangelical Pentecostal minister running the largest Christian network in the States, having an affair is sinful enough. Obviously sexual assault is
criminal.
Exactly.
And also just paints, you know, they tried to silence her, which was obviously terrible. But the revelation that this money had happened sort of placed a focus on how they had been spending the rest of their money and the lives that they had led. Obviously, being Christian, you're supposed to live this sort of like non-affluent life, just and give and, you know, be with the Lord and be happy with your religion and whatnot, and not to covet material wealth and all that kind of stuff. But the Bakers instead had an air-conditioned doghouse for their puppies. They had gold-plated bathroom fixtures.
So what we're looking at here,
go the whole
hog. From Scientology, is no tax being paid, horse loads of cash coming in. If you're a charity, you don't pay tax, am I right? In the States. And they couldn't get rid of it fast enough, I'd say. I'd say it was horsing out of them.
Yeah, so they basically had, they had loads of cars. They were, yeah, they were just absolutely plowing through hundreds of thousands of euro or dollars on whatever they wanted. So then the Charlotte Observer published exposés on the finances and management practice of the network, and PTL went bankrupt after being taken over by a Virginia-based Baptist televangelist, Jerry Falwell, who offered to step in after looking after the scandals.
I would say a lot then went on different colored power suits. She is fond
just
of
loads
a
of different thing
color in a power suit. Jen, you'd love this.
She's pulling it off.
Shoulder pads central.
I moved on to Googling the puppetry, the ministry puppets.
Those puppets disappointing are high on something. They have, come on, look at their eyes. You know, he's not a bad looking man. And Andrew Garfield is slated to play him. And I have a strange fondness for that large foreheaded, very tiny grouped together features man. That's all I'll say.
I think that, so much of the problem, though, with PTL was that they, instead of running commercials, because they didn't want to operate like a normal enterprise, they pleaded with viewers to sign up for monthly pledges to become PTL members.
Similar. Oh, so familiar.
Yeah, very, very familiar to us. But like, they were taking money off their kind of their congregation and using it for ridiculous things. They, in total, they purchased 2,300 acres of land, a 500 room hotel, a water park. They like really tried to emanate the success of Walt Disney. And it was just very clear very early on that they were actually not motivated by spreading the word of the Lord Jesus Christ, but instead making a fuck ton of money, and obviously doing it in illegal ways. So in 1989, Jim was sentenced to 45 years in prison for 24 counts of fraud and conspiracy counts. And in 1992, Tammy filed for divorce while he was in prison, saying in a letter to the New Covenant Church in Orlando that for years I've been pretending that everything was all right when in fact I hurt all the time. I cannot pretend anymore. In October of the following year, she went on to marry a property developer, Ro Messner, after he divorced his own wife. They moved to the Charlotte suburbs of Matthews, North Carolina. And they went on to still live Christian lifestyles. They were neighbors to Christian recording star David L. Cook. And they...
What happened to all their
kind
swag?
Of still went on to...
Was it seized after your man?
Well, I'm sure
arrested?
A lot of it was... I'd say so. So her second husband, Ro, was actually the developer who would help build the heritage land, the Christian Disneyland.
Ah.
So it's possible that there was something potentially going on for them before. Ro was also the man who had helped produce the money to pay off Han, later billing PTL for work that was never completed. So he was obviously somewhat in on it that they had fraudulently gotten him to bill work and it was never done. So he was later convicted of bankruptcy fraud, claiming to owe 30 million to over 300 creditors in 1990. And he went to prison in 1996.
And did Tammy have another very timely change of heart about this relationship she'd been in?
She published her... But she had a sad life. After that, she was diagnosed with cancer. She wrote a couple of books, movies, and had some television appearances. She was twice on the Drew Carey Show in 1996 and 1999. And she just is a fucking character. She lived with cancer for 11 years before she passed away from it. But she's the subject of a new... She's the subject already of a documentary called The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which was narrated by RuPaul. And she's the new film, obviously, starring Jessica Chastain, which is called, let me get it for you.
Is there any suggestion here that Tammy was the sort of, you know, malevolent force?
Mastermind, yeah.
Being the common denominator and all.
I don't know, because I think that Ro was involved and probably became involved. I think there was just like a lot of people around, you know, this. Were just around these people who made a fuckload of money, who were like morally sort of bankrupt. Like they were claiming to have all these values and then they didn't have them. And then. When people realize they were lying about that, or like maybe not fulfilling that in any sort of way, there's like leeway there for them to like take loads of money. I think it just attracted any sort of con artist in fucking orbit. And they all came along and made a shit ton of money, did it illegally.
It's fascinating. But
like this money is the corrupts. Thing, right? If you're going to do power corrupts, money corrupts, of course it does. But if they had just not... I suppose they wouldn't have had the audience if they hadn't claimed to be these super, super Christians.
But it's mad because I always thought this kind of televangelist kind of buzz like came with a degree of knowledge that this person was probably a charlatan. Like, does anyone remember the John Martin, that's not his name, Steve Martin film, A Leap of Faith? It's real kind of 90s comedy. And it was about, you know, one of these kind of characters. The kind you go around in a touring tent and, you know, lay hands on and all of that kind of stuff. That seemed all it's very razzle terrible. Dazzle. And then also a real kind of, you know, I mean, they're showmen.
A showman, but preying on vulnerable people, ultimately. Like people who would find themselves in need of
you're right.
religion, of religious guidance are often
you're so right.
People grieving and the ill and people looking for the miracles, ill. Basically.
Yeah. And oh my God, listen to me.
That's what's at the heart of the badness about this, really. It's like, okay, it's all well and good when everyone is kind of in on the swizz together, which is sort of what you could argue religion is.
Mm.
But if there's a main benefactor here being a family or a church, it's that, isn't it? Happens every single fucking time.
But there's always someone at the top. There is always someone at the top. And because I suppose like the religious values are that you give to your community, and it's very much like about the congregation and the commune and the people that you surround yourself with, it's very easy to convince people to hand over their cash to support the church or to support the ministers or whatever it is. And then obviously they're going to have like a disproportionate high amount of fucking money. And then if you have that level of money, if you have...
What do you think happens?
Go from having very little to having millions in a couple of years, you're not going to have the capacity to know how to spend that money properly.
Well, I would welcome the chance to try.
Exactly.
You would though, because you would turn into... You'd turn into terrible people. The disparity it would create between you and everybody else, it would just, there's no coming back from it.
You're probably right, Cass. Best to just stay medium.
And if you had,
medium.
And if you had loads of money and people in your life were like, you'd never be able to build trustworthy relationships with people. You'd be like, do they want to be my friend or do they want to be my friend because I'm a fucking millionaire?
I buy my own friend.
The answer is generally that they'd.
I buy my own friends. Or you just have to only hang out with people with the same exact amount of millions as you, and that would create a level playing field. But very hard to ask people.
No,
that directly.
I don't think so. But I think we should actually do a really good creep on lotto winners and how it has how it has made people fucking miserable.
Well, I think it was the Daily this week talked a bit about this. Could have been the Guardian, whatever the weekly ones are. And it, there was a woman who'd won the lottery 3 times in her life. She won the first something like 3 million. 2 years later, won it again, 2 million. I think 10 years later, she won 10 million. Or maybe 5 years later, she won 10 million. Unbelievable.
I think when you win the lotto, you should stop playing the lotto.
Well, that's it, Cass. Because I think what she did then, after she had her first big jackpot, was continue to play and play probably very heavily, considering she had all this extra dough. And that was what caused the following wins. But yeah, ultimately,
but that
I
sounds
think she
like
just
someone
blasted
who's, yeah.
through the cash. Addicted yeah. to the high, you could say. Have we lost Sophs? She's gone to get warm
I think
somewhere.
She's just walked out.
She's yeah, walked
she's
out.
She's just left.
And what we're looking at here is...
She's obviously uncomfortable
accent.
Because Sophie's a millionaire. Because she owns a B&B
we're
in the
tour.
West of Ireland.
You would yeah. be a fucking millionaire owning a B&B in these days. Especially on the West of Ireland, I think. Sophie, I was thinking there as you were talking about yes. trying not to get your hair wet in the ocean and how you yeah. should have just fashioned a cap by wrapping cling film around and around and around your head, not your face.
No. I like no. diving, you see.
Like I like to dive in. That would have held. That nah. would have held.
Nah. No. Sure, I tried to wrap a bit of cling film around my tattoo when it was still kind of fresh and I was swimming. And it just...
No joy.
Like the cling film took a moment to laugh in my face before flopping off. Now I did retrieve.
What about Martin? Martine, would he have an old
So you
condom?
Literally walked, you walked a bit of plastic into the sea on your holiday.
Yeah, I did. I just distributed it to the four seas. The four seas? The high seas. Okay, so let me just tell you guys a little story about a little lady whose name was Jodie. Now,
love it.
The whole crazy ex-girlfriend thing, as we know, is a bullshit misogynistic myth. However, sometimes there is exceptions and sometimes bitches do be crazy. Now, if anyone's taking that to publish to Twitter to shame me, you have to include the first part of the sentence. Not just the second in isolation. Thank you. Okay.
Also, so, fuck those people. Men can be bitches too. As women can be bastards.
Dead right. Dead right. Okay. So this is the story of Jodie Arias. Do you guys remember this story? It'll all start coming back, I'd say. Okay. So this, I think as well, the kind of core message of this story is that... there is no such thing as free anal. Yeah.
Didn't expect that.
Always.
Right.
Anal, ironically enough, always comes back to bite you in the arse. Seriously. As a young man called Travis Alexander found out the hard way. The very hard way. The hardest way.
Oh, okay. I'm excited.
Okay. So there's always fallout, basically. You don't convince a woman on that matter without, yeah, like I said, no such thing as free lunch. Okay, so let me tell you a bit about Jodie and Travis. Okay, Jodie was from California. She was born, she's kind of nearly our age. She was born in 1980. So she's just past the 40 mark now. Still looking great. She had kind of like... in some articles described as like a very like notably normal, typical childhood. But then the article would go on to say about how like when she was going through difficult times when she was a teenager, her dad like push her around and her mom used to like, I don't know, like spank the kids. And I was like, kind of veering yeah, into fairly
doesn't
shit.
Sound great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she survived relatively unscathed except for the extremely 90s brows that stayed with her on into the noughties. And then I think there was probably some other invisible scars from her childhood. But the brows really, mm-hmm. the brows held, I think, a key to, a kind of a turbulence.
So what are we talking?
An inner
a
turbulence.
Very thin.
So thin. So gotcha. Thin. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. And so
single
thin,
hair.
Still
end
in like.
End.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like comb over eyebrow of a single little hair. Anyway, she kind of started doing the kind of usual, I would say, low grade teenage. Well, let's just say if Jodie hadn't gone on to experience the things she experienced in later years, all of this would seem like textbook teenage. So, for example, she pissed off her parents because they caught her growing weed in little Tupperware boxes on the roof of their house. Fair.
Fine.
First boyfriend was kind of a vampire. I mean, everyone had that guy in their school. If not, as their actual first, in my case, second boyfriend. Well, like, you know the way, like benign goths / vampires, you know.
Same diff.
She dropped out of high school and went to work at a restaurant. So she was in her kind of teens at this stage, late teens. The restaurant, I will include the name for your benefit, Jen. The restaurant was called Purple Plum. I just thought you'd enjoy it. I said, Jen will like that detail. Jen gets it in.
I do. I mean, it's not giving me a hungry... I don't want to eat a purple plum. I mean, I have. No, it feels... never mind.
Since childbirth, I have been dogged, as you all know. No, they don't all know because this is the other podcast. You know that kind of like fly-by-night hemorrhoid that would often surface and then retract?
Absolutely.
I thought I felt her coming on for a little trip there, but no, then she retreated again. But anyway, look.
Little itchy friend. Very relatable.
That is just called a Saturday night with a little bullet of waxy anusol, and it's very pleasant. Okay, so...
Cass is Jeffrey Dahmer's glasses combined with her head shaking have taken it on a new level now. She's just not impressed.
I'm just listening.
Yeah.
I am impressed. I'm just absorbing. I just don't have
something to
communicate right now.
She has no hemorrhoids. Good for you, Cass.
Not a roid in sight.
I don't.
I know, well, I always thought I was going to be that person who would never experience it either until my children. Little bastards that they are. I don't even know what they could have been doing in that area that would make that all then become a recurrent issue. But again, hey, anyone, just listeners, get in touch. Just put subject line purple plum and write to me at creepingforlove@gmail.com. But look, basically all I'm saying is if I went... And I was absolutely starving. If I saw a restaurant cafe called Purple Plum, I'd have to pass. I just couldn't. It would kill my appetite. But anyway, I digress. Okay, Jodie was quite bad at relationships. As in, she'd kind of strange instincts when it came to her partners. So for example, she got then in her late teens... She was about 20. She got with a guy called Daryl who was divorced. And pretty soon into the relationship, Jodie, for reasons like really only known to herself, started modeling herself on Daryl's ex-wife, which he has chosen to get that woman out of his life. It seems odd that you would then start kind of cosplaying as her. But anyway... She obviously got a look at the ex-wife, said hair, tits, car, and did just that. Dyed her hair blonde, got a boob job, got the same car as this woman. Incredibly, that relationship with Daryl didn't last. So then in 2006, right? So she'd been waitressing on and off since high school. She was into photography, but... It is roundly agreed that she was very bad at it. So she saw this kind of like marketing material, right? For, what is it called again? An MLM, multi-level marketing. Is that
that what marketing you call those pyramid schemes? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm. So multi-level marketing, yeah.
Thank you.
Genius.
Genius.
Bring them back.
So she
bring
saw
back gifting tables as well.
Promo for this MLM that was called Prepaid Legal. And with Prepaid Legal, it was basically a kind of MLM that sold insurance. So what you did is, if you wanted to work with Prepaid Legal, you paid $250 to an associate in the company. And you obviously came in then on that bottom layer of the pyramid. And you basically paid for the honor of being able to sell insurance. And basically you'd be selling insurance to clients. And the kind of insurance you were selling was the person who bought the insurance would always have a lawyer. So it was insurance to always have a lawyer, which is obviously kind of having quite low expectations for your own life, that you feel that it would be best if you were insured for always having legal representation.
But is that, I wonder, is that just guaranteeing a lawyer, or is this insurance to pay for the thing? For your legal. Okay,
both.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It would just guarantee that you had the funds to cover a lawyer, just the way health insurance would kind of guarantee that you have a stay in hospital covered. It's just like, it's just so interesting, because with health insurance, I mean, you're pretty much guaranteed to need it at some point. Most people would hope that they would not. Jen, you though, however,
not
you
me.
Would be the perfect candidate.
At the moment,
you
this looks like a good
legal
deal
insurance.
Me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Now, I just thought, as an aside, that a phrase like prepaid legal truly illustrates the importance of punctuation. Because when I first came across it, all I could hear was prepaid legal. And I just kind of heard, like, it sounds like, okay, well, like it could be, for example, a sexy service where you got...
Oh, sorry. The person was of legal age.
Yeah, that they were prepaid and legal. Know what I mean? Oh, like kind of a sexual gifting service. Like it's like a one for all voucher, but it's for sex work. That's all I hear. Basically, I'm just saying, think before you buy the domain is all I'm saying. Anyway. Yeah.
Do you think that our minds go to dark places from years of doing this podcast, though?
I think
when I watch anything now, when anything, I'm waiting for the con or the murder or the affair or something. I have no faith in humanity whatsoever.
Yeah, when people tell me like,
when someone's telling me a story about their own lives.
Yeah.
I'm like, where's the twist? I don't care.
No. Someone's like, my friend met this guy on Tinder, and the person can be like beaming with contact joy for their friend. And I'd be like, where's he going to be? Where's the bit?
It's not him.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Surely. Yeah. There isn't just a legitimate person using a dating app. Seems too far-fetched. I think our friendship, this is now just a bit of love from me to you guys. Our friendship has countered the blackness for me. And the love of the creeps as well. Anyway, I can't see how you guys are reacting facially to that bit of sincerity, because I'm over in my notes tab, which is covering you both. So
well,
wonderful.
I was really touched, and Jen rolled her eyes.
I was just waiting for a secondary dick, but none came.
And it never
came. Yeah, it's like waiting for it'll come privately elsewhere. It'll be somewhere. It's being banked now for something else.
Oh yeah.
For the pre-records.
Slip in the shiv later when you're least expecting.
Exactly.
Okay, so remember, it's 2006. Jodie has just seen this sexy DVD material for Prepaid Legal, and she was like, oh my god, that is what I want to do with my life. Well, kind of. She was like, interesting. And a friend was like, do you want to come to this very sexy MLM conference? And I picture it as taking place in like an Ibis or something like that, and some very shiny suits and piss catchers on the men. Women brush up well, they probably looked good.
Not an eyebrow in place in the place, though, I'd say. Everyone just slivers of eyebrows. So anyway, at this conference, she met a guy called Travis. Okay. Huh. And she was immediately, it was a fairy tale from the moment they met. Okay. Like,
yes.
For example, she wasn't yet. Sparks flying. Sparks flying. She wasn't yet in the prepaid legal pyramid. However, he was like, do you want to go to this conference mixer with me later? And she was like, oh, but I'm not even indoctrinated into this MLM yet. And he was like, no probs, I'll get you in. And then it was like a black and gold ball. And she was like, I have nothing to wear.
And
suave Travis, or T-Dog to his friends, went out and bought her a dress. It was proper Pretty Woman shit.
Oh, that's very ballsy.
To go to the conference mixer, and she got to cosplay insurance saleswoman. And so that obviously swept her off her feet somewhat.
She was willing to do anything to repay him.
Nearly, yes. Well, pretty much. Now, I need to tell you a little bit about Travis to explain what happened next year.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what happened next, just kind of cold, just for the confusion of it. So, yes. Took her to the black and gold ball. She was swept off her feet, and then Travis converted her.
Yeah.
Converted her?
I looked to Cassie to say, yeah, as if like, Natch. Or was she saying yes to somebody off mic?
Converted her into what?
Mormonism.
Like, to follow...
Mormonism, hence yes. The angel. Yes, yes. I'm with you.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you know about the anal thing. Oh, we're going to talk about this, but this is so interesting. The Mormon sex menu is very, very intriguing. Yeah. Okay. So let me roll
taking
back
it up the ass for Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. Jesus doesn't mind. Jesus looks the other way on that one and a few others. Okay, so take it back. I'm going to take it back a notch to Travis, tell you a little tiny bit about Travis before we go back to Jody and Travis and the love story for the ages. So poor Travis, right? Quite a different childhood to Jody. He grew up in extreme poverty. His mother once, in a meth-fueled rage, smashed up their family possessions.
God.
Travis had the option to go and live with his Mormon grandparents. And when that option came up and he had the chance to choose between meth or Mormonism, he chose the less taxing path of Mormonism. Went to live with the grandparents, did his mission in Colorado. And he immediately was very, very happy and comfortable in the whole Mormon community, because it was just like his childhood had been total chaos. Here was sort of a community. There was parameters. He just knew how it worked. And it was sort of straightforward, you know. However, even though he was kind of baptized and had done his mission and everything, and he had taken a vow of chastity, which is a total normal thing for Mormons to do, but obviously spells disaster. It always does. It
really does. Like,
it never works out when people just denounce this really core part of human existence. He wore a ring that said CTR, and it didn't stand for cunt's rule. It in fact stood for choose the right, and the right being
the
not
right
fucking.
Hole.
Yes. So he he was a bit a la carte when it came to the Mormonism, mainly because he could not stop just jizzing around the place. And now, being Mormon, he was kind of jizzing adjacent to a lot of these people. We'll get into it. So then it was after he was kind of baptized and in Mormonism that he joined prepaid legal. He was kind of just like really pulling himself up by the bootstraps. he sort of got into a low-grade bit of Tony Robbinsing it.
Okay.
In terms of like,
I see.
He kind of was giving sort of talks about being self-made, overcoming, you know, struggles, things like that. He was a guy on the upward trajectory, good looking guy, as I said, T-dog to his friends. And they moved to, Arizona, to a town that had been founded by the LDS. And so he was super in it in terms of the Mormonism. Okay, so cut back. Remember, he's just met Jody at the prepaid legal conference and
swept her off her feet.
Swept her off her feet. Jody, very suggestible. She immediately became very interested in the Mormonism aspect of Travis, because I think from the off, she basically put the eye on him and was like, it was basically the equivalent of me pretending to like And You Will Know Us by Our Trail of Dead when I first met Seb. It's
perfect.
When you're like, oh yeah, I love insert unlikely
Nine
thing
Inch Nails.
That, yeah, well, yeah, yeah. Whatever it may be.
Or no, I ended up in Berlin thing. At that gig.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes. Like anything that you've pretended to. I love smoking. And then cut to, you're then smoking for the next 20 years. All because you were trying to impress Ross when you were 13 and you were sitting on a wall by the DART station. Okay, so basically Jody went for the Mormonism. And they, even though he was bringing her into the church and being all like, this is what the church is, this is what we can and can't do, they immediately started meeting in a friend's house, it was like a boning way stop that was halfway between their houses. So Jody was still living in California and he was living in Arizona. And then he moved to Utah as well. So like they are, it's a bit of a long distance. It's like 300 miles.
Yeah.
So yeah, they were meeting at a halfway house that belonged to their friends.
300 miles.
Yeah. Like
so far, isn't it? Like this
so
is no...
far. Yeah.
Yeah. But in, hard to relate to. In,
well, I suppose if they're meeting
island.
Halfway, it's like 2 hours for each of them. And
yeah,
they really, really want to come. Because they're Mormons and I suppose they're used to jumping through hoops, you know, to get the catch your hole.
Yes,
basically. Exactly. So I guess to them, they were like, OK, like we'll do this. Now, I need to tell you all about the Mormon sex technicalities. OK, oral, not sex. OK, oral doesn't count in the eyes of Jesus. Oral is kosher. Anal is cool. No probs with anal.
Huh.
Now, dry humping, very popular among Mormons. Dry humping in the Mormon community is called the Provo push. Obviously,
Provo push
means something completely different in America as it would here in Ireland. So, all I could picture.
What does it mean here?
IRA. It's the Provos. It's provisional Irish.
Oh, sorry.
Republican Army. So
I was thinking Pavlova.
Don't hump a Pavlova. It would go everywhere.
What a mess.
Yeah, so the Provo push is called the Provo push because it originated in a town called Provo. But I'm just really enjoying. So for our American listeners, of which there are apparently dozens, the Provos is a slang for the IRA over here. So basically, lots of dry humping among the, I won't even finish saying it because, you know, they say that they're not active anymore, but.
I like how the town Provo, whatever, in the US has decided it invented dry humping and then decided to name it after itself. Picking
it's,
better thing.
It's actually so audacious of them. There's no way that you originated dry humping. I mean, dry humping is the kind of thing that as soon as you hit puberty, your pelvis, completely independent of your brain, your pelvis is just automatically humping things. Like
just frottaging everything in your home.
Just
Frottage.
Frottage.
The cuddly toys that got it. I'm telling you.
You've gone too far.
Ah, Cassie, don't be ridiculous. Everyone had a little teddy bear that had like a paw, you know, a paw with a certain angle. Look at her. She's just looking away in disgust. You see, Cassie, this is what early Christian intervention does, Cass. You're still in recovery.
So you're forgetting.
I know. I was sending you a Zoom hug.
You guys were all frottaging your little bears, and I was reading John 3:16.
Oh, Jesus. Was that one of the bits about going literally. To hell? Literally.
Of course.
Just fuck John. Love everybody.
Fuck that guy. Okay. So anyway, they were doing the Provo push all over the shop anytime they got a chance. Okay. Now, a dynamic started to develop between Travis and Jody. I think we're all going to recognize this dynamic. Travis constantly insisting that she was not his girlfriend.
Oh, yes.
Okay. I feel like...
Oh, that old chestnut.
When I announced that everyone would know this dynamic, I was really exposing myself there. But I know this dynamic. I had a boyfriend who was like ashamed of me. And I couldn't compute that, like, I desperately needed to walk away from this and instead pushed hard into it.
Yeah, no. Yeah. You were the one you're going to change him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He just doesn't realize that he loves me as he is consistently hiding me from his friends, which Travis was doing to Jody as well. He was Provo pushing her.
But if I just take off my glasses and straighten my hair.
Yeah, exactly. In every picture of them on the internet, he just looks really resigned. Like, she looks happy and hot because she is hot. And he just looks like he just wants to be anywhere else at all. He wants to be up his own asshole after 10 Guinnesses the night before rather than being standing next to that woman. Anyway, shitty behavior on his part. Then Jody kind of starts, kind of gets a hold of that sort of. Do you remember the girl who? Oh fuck, I can't remember her name. We did her in the live in Cork. Oh,
go God, on.
I can't remember
who was she.
Anyway,
hot dogs.
Yes,
hot dogs.
Hot dogs. Yeah. Basically, Jody started kind of playing out of the hot dogs playbook. She got an email that she wrote herself from a stalker that she made up herself, showed it to Travis in a kind of a bid for him to like invite her to come and live with him.
Rescue. Oh, I see.
Yeah. Yeah, anything just to kind of try and wheedle a reaction out of him. And again, I really relate. Like that kind of stonewalling that a person who is Provo pushing you every chance they get, but then absolutely stonewalling you is fucked up. It's a really bad dynamic. It's fucked up. Anyway, then Jody started... escalating, shall we say. She'd arrive in the middle of the night. She lived 5 hours drive away. It's important to note. She'd arrive at his door 2-3 a.m. If the door was locked, she'd crawl in the cat flap.
Oh, God.
Remember?
I mean, contortionist.
It's impressive. It's very impressive. They might have had a very big cat. I don't know. Do you remember in school when you'd write your name and the last name of your crush on like notebooks and stuff like that? Again, maybe it just might be me. But anyway, she took that now, very next level, had a t-shirt made that simply said Travis Alexander's, as in property of.
Belonging to.
Yuck. Yeah. She wore that around, tried to claim Travis had given her,
But friends said later, it's no way Travis gave her that shirt. If Travis had done it, it would have said T-Dog. So then next thing, she's breaking into his MySpace account. Remember, we're in 2007. So all these like dirty texts he'd been sending to other women on MySpace. Then next move, very interesting. She used the dirty texts that she found breaking into his private MySpace. She used that to blackmail him into being her boyfriend. It's wild.
That is just...
It's definitely not healthy. Can I ask quick side question? Have either of you ever broken into anyone's email or...
Yes.
No, really? It's...
Yes.
Tell us.
No,
every single
I feel
person
so...
I've ever been with.
Shut up. No.
Cassie, do you think this is wrong? Did you
no, I feel so passionate about not breaking into people's, not reading people's messages or not reading people's emails. Everyone has like the right to privacy. If you break that boundary and they do it to you and they see all my dirty texts, then I'm in trouble. That's obviously a joke. There's no dirty texts. But no,
like
I just feel really passionate
party.
About not doing
you're right.
that.
But I think it's a youth factor thing.
It's a wild thing.
It's like a youth thing. You would do that.
I've seen
youth.
It.
It is when I've you're really it. Young. I suppose if you were, in relationships with people when everyone is texting and has the access to everything all the time, then maybe there'd be a temptation there.
But no, it's very bad. It's very bad. I've seen it backfire like dramatically. So that would never tempt me. So obviously for quite selfish reasons there. I just don't want to drift into it.
I just don't think we should surveil other people, you know? I have zero tolerance for surveillance.
Surveillance, yeah. Good. That's true.
You're right.
Okay, friends tried to warn Travis because they felt that this was getting fucking weird, which it really was. You know this house where they met to do their provo pushing slash anal? Slash anal, that's such a horrible combination of words. Like anal, lovely on its own. Don't introduce slash. Okay. So the friend
slash anal.
It was a husband and wife that they were meeting at their gap. Also, how annoying that your friends are just using your spare room to bone. While you're just trying to have a nice life. Anyway, one night
so
a friend
awkward.
Said, sat Travis down and said this exactly. She said, you're going to end up dismembered in Jody's fridge. Mm. And then the friend realized that Jody was at the door listening to this warning being issued. Like, imagine hearing somebody whisper that about you.
And then what does she do?
She drifted away. She said she was leaving. Jody did, right? And then they thought she'd left. The old fake leave move. The friend reiterated to Travis, I think probably saying something along the lines of, you see? She's fucking genuinely getting crazier. And then sure wasn't Jody still there, so I heard the whole thing again. Bit of a almost physical version of the three-way calling. And then Travis started sexting a lot to other women and she kept catching him. They kept breaking up, but then they were constantly still banging on the side. And they had at this point gotten penetrative, actually, I must add. He baptized her. Like, he himself did the baptism. And then they fucked for the first time properly just a few hours later.
Oh, gorgeous.
So that's quite interesting because, like, you're doing a baptism where you're renouncing things and pledging things and I don't know what, because obviously, like most Catholic children, I wasn't consulted. My baptism was not consensual. So I don't remember what goes on at them. But I know that you definitely must say, like, I'm not going to fuck till I'm married, because that seems just basic. So anyway, they were fucking. So anyway, right? They're breaking up. They're getting back together. He started dating a girl called Lisa. Then Jody, not a bother to her, moves just from 300 miles away to just 3 miles down the road. So now she's quite local to Travis, at least for a stretch. I can't remember it. And she seems to go a bit back and forth between California, where her parents and family live, to 3 miles from Travis's house. He's with this Lisa one, but sometimes like him and Lisa would be like just sitting on the couch at home in the living room, just shifting, and then would have the sensation of being watched. Jody, just outside the window, just staring in.
Jody needs to get a life now at this stage.
Oh, no. Jody is, she has a life. Her life is so exciting. It's full of fucking with Travis. She starts sneaking into his house when he's not there and moving shit around and hiding shit. And she sent Lisa, the new girlfriend, an anonymous email saying that, quote, God was ashamed of your whoredoms. I'm going to keep whoredoms.
What a great word, though.
Pop it in the back pocket. It's a great word. Travis, okay, would come home, find Jody asleep in his bed. They are not going out anymore at all. But this is still happening. And then you see, the thing is, Travis was still fucking her. And so that's mixed messages. And Jody really, I mean, I'm not defending her, but she wasn't sending mixed messages. She was sending one single message, extremely loud, and it was, I am becoming more and more unhinged. Like, I'm breaking into your house. I'm breaking into your email. I'm not doing
all the warning signs are there.
So then the year 2008 happens. Boom. Trav has a really, really persistent ex-girlfriend, and he also has one of those 100% mortgages. So now he is in negative equity on top of everything else. So,
oh, that's very stressful.
That is a shit buzz. Massively shit buzz. Around the same time, Travis starts a blog, because again, 2008. Then Jody starts a blog, because Travis started a blog. Jody's blog is just reposting things from Travis's blog. It is such
Has
a bizarre
Travis
type of intimidation. No,
at
no.
this stage, why not?
He never did. I think probably because of toxic masculinity. I would say.
I see. Okay.
Don't you think? Because I just feel like it's 2008. There's way less discourse about, like, there's less discourse about intimate spousal abuse. There's way less about domestic abuse where men are the victim. Like, I just think it's all kind of that sort of stuff, probably. Okay. What do you guys think? Okay. And I think he just thought he was in control. And also, he was a fairly, like, young, fit guy. I would say in his mind, he's probably never felt physically threatened, maybe. Like, think about it. You know, he moves in Mormon circles. She's like Victoria Beckham small. She's a tiny thing. And, you know, the way I would say, like, that he probably has never felt threatened physically because of that. So it's just, I can see how that maybe never crosses his mind. But yeah, it's definitely. And then I think the thing is as well, that he just keeps going for her too. Like, even though it's definitely getting into such bizarro batshit territory, they're still having stuff like phone sex and everything. And she, remind me to come back to the phone sex thing. So anyway, right, it all comes to a head with a blog post. Of course it does. The 2000s were a wild ride. Travis, obviously very foresight here, Travis is displaying. He posts the blog post about wanting to marry a gold digger. Now, Travis may have invented clickbait because, so it's a very clicky headline, but when you read the article, what Travis really wanted was a gold digger woman who could dig deep and find the gold in him. So it was a metaphor, a very beautiful metaphor.
Right.
Jody read the blog post and was sent into a tailspin because it wasn't about her in any fucking way. She was never going to be Travis's gold digger, even though she spent like nearly 2 years, I would say athletically, going after him. And she retreated, like shut down, no contact with him. She had, prior to this, never stopped talking about him with everyone in her life. I'd say it was fucking tedious. Jen has had to tell me to shut up about people. In fact, one of the nicest things Jen ever did for me was
just letting me know
that I really needed to shut up about this guy because it was becoming so tedious. And look, you need to tell your friends that because they do sound like idiots. Otherwise.
They don't know sometimes. They're spiraling,
exactly. Just
sometimes people are closure just processing.
I married repeatedly.
Him. Processing. Oh yeah, that's true.
So anyway, yeah. So she was fucking furious. Okay. Next thing, she staged a burglary of her grandparents' house. She stole $30, a DVD player, a gun. And I know, probably like a roll of duct tape as well. It was a very shit staged burglary. Like $30 and a DVD player.
I feel like the gun is the high ticket item there.
So very clearly trying to be hidden among DVD, roll of duct tape. $30. Like $30? Could you not even just stump up a bit more money to steal? Like this $30 was stolen out of her room in the grandparents' house. So it was her $30. And that was her, like, this will throw them off the scent. The burglar stole $30 from the granddaughter. Couldn't be her. And she got herself some jerry cans full of petrol. And then she kind of set up this weird kind of like smokescreen date with this new guy that she'd been kind of pretending to date. So she was trying to build an alibi. Okay. So she'd arranged this date with this lad. This is murky. I found it a bit hard to get the timeline of all this perfect. But basically, she went on the date so that it would look like she was in California on this date, the night of June 3rd. Then drives through the night, gets to Travis's the next day, next morning or something. Goes to Travis. We know for a fact that they had sex all afternoon. We have photographic evidence of this. Jodie has great tits. I went looking for these pictures because I am black through and through, black in my soul. I need you to cut that filth out. I am filth. So some of the pickies, just for any listeners who are immediately like, I know what I'm going to do next, just be aware that some are very, very close up of genitalia. Okay, next picture, right? There's lots of pictures that are like time stamped 5 p.m. on this afternoon. And they're like Travis having a shower. And it's just like, you know, a bit of bicep, bit of man in the shower, you know.
Yes. Then
the last picture of Travis alive is really, really disturbing. Travis sitting in the shower, just looking really, really despairing or grim, just something. Okay. So the camera at some point dropped to the floor and kept taking pictures. So there are these really weird blurry pictures that seem to have captured some of what happened in the next few minutes, which is chaos, murder. Jodie stabbed him 30 times.
Holy fuck.
At some point, he managed to lurch out of the shower and spew blood into the sink of the bathroom and sort of stagger out of the shower, out of the bathroom. She is stabbing him the whole time. She eventually stabbed him in the head. Slit his throat. Ear to ear, so deep she hit spine. And then she shot him in the head with the gun.
Just why? Just at the end.
Fucking.
Like, if I can't have him, no one can.
Well, I think no one could have him after the throat slitting, in fairness. Gunshot, not necessary in any way. But yeah, like, I do not in any way want to sound like I'm impressed. but, and I'm not, but like, can you imagine what it took to do that?
No.
I just cannot, even just in terms of
the way you described her as well, as size being so wise, slight.
There's such a discrepancy. It's just insane.
I wonder how she achieved it. And how, you know, that way, I'm presuming just sheer surprise from his perspective just left him vulnerable.
That last picture, if you look at it, you can bring it up real quick.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
It looks, my theory is that she's holding a gun on him there.
What did you search to see it?
Probably Travis Alexander picture.
Alexander, maybe. Last picture.
Yeah.
All right, we're all going in. Oh, like, right. Is that picture just zoom in on his face? So,
kind that of. One. You can see his shoulders.
And the bathroom tiles behind. Yeah.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, very he looks strange. Really haunted / hunted. Like, yes. I just feel like, is he looking at someone that he's suddenly realized, oh, fuck. It's hard to say.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Has she said something or
is she holding the gun now or something?
He was shot last.
He
was shot last.
Yeah, which I think, you know, the way with injuries, like stabbing, they can tell if your heart's still pumping while you're being stabbed and things like that.
Yeah.
So Dexter. I think that, that it was the gunshot.
Then what happens? She presumably was caught immediately. Or did she even try to run?
Yes, madness. So she did a bit of a cursory swipe around the place with a towel. Hilarious. Like one of the worst jobs I've ever seen. The house was drenched in blood. I don't know why I did this, but I've gone through loads of pictures today. And so she did the cursory swipe around with the towel, wash towel, dragged him back into the shower to kind of wash his body. Like, again, I can't get over.
He was bleeding out then. If she was getting rid of the blood, she was like, oh, fuck, it's still coming out of him. So she lashes him in there.
There was blood everywhere. But, like, madness, because there was blood all over the hall outside, all over the bathroom, and she did not clean it. Like, it was weird to even attempt to clean him / attempt to clean the place with the towel. But maybe she did embark on it and then realized this is insanely pointless. I don't know. But even just then again, she get him back into the bath. Like, think
but
about
she
trying
to
pull
planned this
Dan
whole thing
into a bathroom.
What about that?
She did
superhuman
plan it.
Strength. Yeah,
the adrenaline or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know if she put that. Well, she did put thought into what happened next. I don't think it was that smart. But basically, she picked up the camera, deleted all the pictures or thought she had, but it was one of those kind of like, you know, they were able to extract them later. She put the camera and the towel along with a ton of bleach into the washing machine in the house and turned that on and then hit the road.
Weird.
Yeah, she drove in a rental car to this prepaid legal conference. All the while, she had left her phone off for like something like 24 hours that was the night before, on into the day and into the night before. Like, she didn't turn her phone on again until she was ages away from his house again. And she was massively planning everything. She left messages on your man Travis's voicemail, fake messages asking if he wanted to accompany her to Othello. I've heard one of the messages is all like really weirdly formal, but I guess maybe it would be really formal with the person you just murdered. I don't know. So anyway, look, she did hit the road. Obviously, she didn't get away with this for too long. Like, she met her kind of, you know, that guy she was sort of dating. She met him at the conference that she was kind of driving to. And like, there was loads of stuff like, he met her and she had loads of bandages on her hands.
Oh,
and
for God's sake.
She was wearing long sleeves all the way through the conference, even though it was boiling hot. She told different people different stories about how she'd got the cuts on her hands. So she told him that they were from an injury that she had gotten while working at a restaurant called Margaritaville. Now, If you were going to make up the name of a restaurant that was in Sikkimo County, California, would you call it Margaritaville? Yeah. No such restaurant exists.
Not make one. If I was going to start a restaurant, that's what I would call it.
Yeah, maybe. And then, like, when they started, like, obviously Travis's roommates found him in the bathroom, in the bath, dead. So grim. I've seen pictures of all of this. Why did I do it? Now I contain them forever. But anyway, they found him and police obviously called. There was just a ton of evidence at the scene. There was a bloody palm print in the bathroom.
Of hers.
Which was a bloody palm print. The blood was a mixture of hers and his.
Oh, for God's sake.
She was insisting that she hadn't seen him since April. Right. Even though, like, there was literally pictures of her on the camera naked, pictures of her entire gusset undercarriage area. I just suddenly had a flash of, like, wouldn't that be such a funny lineup if that was the only way of identifying? Anyway, okay. So look, it was pretty open.
It'd be a good one.
It would be good, wouldn't it? Because everyone's is very unique. No two are the same. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they just arrested her pretty quick. They were like, yeah, seems like you're just totally guilty.
And how long did she get?
Within the month, yeah. She was on trial. The trial was frankly insane. They were trying to paint this whole picture of, like, Travis being this massive deviant. And do you remember when I was saying they were constantly phone sexing? So mm-hmm. Jodie, one time, unbeknownst to Travis, recorded the phone sexing. And so this was played at the trial because they were trying, the defense, because they were trying they were trying to implicate Travis and basically make it out that he had, like, pedophilic tendencies. Fucking weird stuff. Like, per usual, basically, victim blaming, just smearing their name, doing whatever to try and get off. This sexy tape thing was, like, over an hour long, and they played it in the courtroom for, like, all the way through.
Which, oh my God,
mind-bogglingly awkward
and boring.
And also, okay, so I have one tiny bit from it. And then, I mean, this is the end of the story, I'm afraid. We'll have to just leave Jodie on this high. This is the quite literally climax of the story. Would you like to hear?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, bearing in mind, I played this earlier and listened with great interest, thinking that I was hearing it through my headphones, only to realize that my headphones weren't plugged into the computer. And as you know, I'm staying in a B&B. Okay, here we go. Ba, 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 ba. Are you hearing it?
Oh, God. Oh, God. Disgusting.
Just
incredibly
awkward.
Yeah.
Oh, so awkward.
Punish us no more, Sophie. Please.
But thank you for that horrific tale.
Okay, hang on. Hang on. You guys are playing out of my... I need to put you back in my ears. There you go. Yeah, so Jodie, like, just, yeah, massively found guilty.
Well, fuck you, Jodie. But God alive, there was a lot of times there where somebody could have intervened. Not to, do you know that way? The warning signs were all there. Even explicitly told to him via a friend. Yeah. Not that he's to blame, but maybe we know more now about that level of cutting it off at the pass.
Yeah. And we absolutely know more now about what abuse can look like in forms. And, like, that is thanks to survivors of abuse, like, telling their story. Exactly. But it's very, very very fucking sad.
Well, thank you very much for listening, dear listeners. Should you wish to hear more, you know where to find us.
We Patreon.com/thecreepdive. We'll see you soon.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.